Call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is Wednesday, March 25th. We don't have a lot of items to get through, but we have a lot of people that want to talk about just a few items. So we're going to try to keep moving right along today. We're going to start out with an informational meeting with some invited testimony, a couple of presentations, one from the Department of Environmental Quality and one from the PUC on reducing carbon emissions through energy policy. Then we're going to move into a public hearing on Senate Bill 477. So with that, I'm going to open up the informational meeting, reducing carbon emissions through energy policy. And if the aforementioned departments slash commissions could come forward. I'll just let you jump right in. I don't care who goes first.
All right. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. Thank you for your time this afternoon. For the record, my name is Colin McConaughey with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm going to start off today by giving a brief description of EPA's Clean Power Plan, otherwise known as 111D. This is the EPA's proposed federal regulations of coal and natural gas power plants to reduce CO2 emissions from those facilities. EPA's Clean Power Plan proposal is perhaps one of the most significant efforts under the Obama administration to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Again, it targets those carbon emissions from coal and natural gas power plants, and the current proposal would reduce those emissions by approximately 30% by 2030. Coal and natural gas power plants happen to be the largest point source of greenhouse gas emissions within the United States, comprising approximately one-third of total domestic greenhouse gas emissions. And EPA is proposing this federal rule under their authority of Section 111D of the Clean Air Act. So before I begin to describe EPA's proposal, I'll just give you a quick rundown here of the timeline. EPA proposed this rule last year in June, and they now expect to issue their final rule later this summer. Initially, they have targeted June of this year, but we understand they have delayed it by 1 to 2 months, so we expect it later in the summer of this year. Whenever EPA does issue their final rule, we understand states will have at least 1 year to develop and submit our state plans to implement the federal rule, with an opportunity to extend, to get a one-year extension should we need new legislation to enforce our state plan, or a two-year extension if we are coordinating our state plan with other states' plans. So I'll begin by describing the process that EPA is using to issue the Clean Power Plan. Much of the process at the outset is dictated by Section 111D of the Clean Air Act. Section 111D directs EPA to develop a uniform national emission guideline based on what it refers to as the best system of emission reductions. And it further defines that as comprising all adequately demonstrated measures to reduce the targeted pollutant from the facilities in question. So in this case, EPA starts out by developing, a uniform national emission guideline based on all adequately demonstrated measures to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from coal and natural gas power plants. Once EPA has developed that emission guideline, they then apply it to each state separately. And because in this case, the power sectors within each state differ, and differ sometimes significantly, the application of this emission guideline, although it's a single national guideline, the application of it to each state separately produces distinct state-specific emission reduction targets. In this case, the emission reduction targets are expressed as an emission rate. I'll explain a little bit more about that in the next slide, but it is an emission rate of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour of generation. After EPA has developed this emission guideline and applied it to each state, states are then given a period of time, again, at least a year, to develop state plans to achieve that emission reduction. 111D affords states a fairly high degree of flexibility in determining what we as states prefer to do in order to achieve that emission reduction goal. And EPA appears to be embracing that element of 111D by giving states significant amounts of flexibility, at least in their proposal. Once states develop our state implementation plans, we then submit them to EPA for review. And after they have approved it, we begin implementing the elements of our state plan. EPA, in this case, anticipates that compliance with those state plans would begin in 2020, and states would achieve the ultimate emission goals by 2030. So I'll get now describe what is probably the most important part of their proposal, which is how they constructed this emission guideline that they're using in their proposal. And EPA determined that all adequately demonstrated measures to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from coal and natural gas facilities can be lumped into four areas, or building blocks, as they refer to them. And I'll walk you through each of these four building blocks. And they apply, again, these are the blocks are the same, but their application in each state differs because of the different power sector characteristics within each state. So I'll start here at the left. The first building block within EPA's emission guideline includes all emission reductions that could be reasonably achieved by improving the operations at a coal facility, so making it operate a little bit more efficiently and emitting a little less CO2 per unit of generation. The second building block looks at the amount of emission reductions that could be achieved by shifting from coal generation to existing natural gas generation within the state. So a state that has quite a lot of both, quite a lot of coal and natural gas generation both, may have some significant emission reductions that could be achieved by shifting generation at those coal facilities to greater reliance on the natural gas facilities. I should note that natural gas emits about half as much CO2 as coal does per unit of generation. The third building block in EPA's emission guideline includes the emission reductions that can be achieved by investing in renewable energy or otherwise non-emitting sources of generation. And then finally, the fourth building block includes the emission reductions that can be achieved by reducing the overall demand in the electricity sector and thereby reducing demand on those natural gas and coal power plants. So EPA determines the amount of emission reductions that can be achieved within each of these four blocks in a given state, adds those emission reductions up, and that produces a state's emission rate target, again, as expressed as pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour. And for Oregon, there at the bottom of the slide, you'll now see the application of those four building blocks, as EPA proposes, results in a 48% emission reduction by 2030. EPA used 2012 data to characterize states' starting conditions, and in Oregon in that year, using EPA's data, we emitted on average 717 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour generated within our state. Again, applying those four building blocks lowers the average emission rate 48% down to 372 pounds per megawatt hour. That's the target. If the proposal was final today, that's the average emission rate we as a state would need to hit by 2030. So I want to briefly draw some parallels between those building blocks and policies we have here in the state already. I think Jason's going to describe these in more detail, but it's worth noting that there is a lot of connection here between what we're already doing in Oregon and what EPA is contemplating to include in their emission guideline. I'll skip block one because block two for Oregon effectively wipes out any effect that block one would have. Again, block one is the includes emission reductions from improvements at coal power plants, and then block two looks at emission reductions that can occur from shifting away from coal and relying more on gas generation. In the case of Oregon and the way EPA has developed block two, they say that all the generation at Oregon's one coal plant in Boardman could be shifted onto existing natural gas power plants throughout our state. In our case, we of course already have an agreement with PGE to stop coal operations anyway at Boardman by the end of 2020. So we're already on track to achieve the emission reductions envisioned by block two.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
If I may interject. My understanding was that Boardman wasn't going to be counted.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think Boardman is included in the proposal. It is certainly embedded in the existing emission rates that I just mentioned in the previous slide, as well as seven, I believe, other natural gas-fired power plants.
I understand that.
So for clarification, it's included in 717?
Correct.
It's included in the...
And will we get credit for
yes.
closing it on our way to three, whatever
yes.
the number was?
Yeah. Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, absolutely. We would get credit. Again, as the proposal exists today, for closing or ceasing coal operations at Boardman.
We had discussions on this back in Washington, and they said because we decided to close Boardman before 2012, it wouldn't count towards the reduction. Could you send me any information you have on that?
I can, absolutely.
Thank you. Good question.
Question, yeah.
Again, real briefly here, just a couple more parallels between what we have here in Oregon and the building blocks in EPA's guideline. Block three of their guideline envisions emission reductions coming from renewable energy. We, of course, already have a statewide renewable portfolio standard that requires increasing amounts of renewable energy acquisition by our state's largest utilities. And then finally, building block four, emission reductions that can be accrued from energy efficiency. Oregon happens to be a national leader in the acquisition of energy efficiency, largely through investments from PGE and PacifiCo ratepayers that fund the Energy Trust of Oregon, as well as ratepayers in our public utilities that fund energy efficiency investments from the Bonneville Power Administration. So again, just some parallels there, that we don't have any numbers to speak to what business as usual would look like compared to the ultimate target that EPA envisions, in part because of some significant questions that still remain. I'll touch on a couple of those here in the next few slides. But just again, there are quite a lot of some significant parallels between existing policies and what EPA is envisioning in their proposal. So transitioning now to some to describe some comments that Oregon agencies have already provided to EPA. DEQ, in concert with the Oregon Department of Energy, as well as the Public Utility Commission, jointly developed a letter to EPA toward the end of last year. And in the letter, we expressed broad support for EPA's endeavor to produce a national greenhouse gas regulation for the energy sector, as well as more specific support for them defining the emission reductions possible quite broadly to include reductions possible from renewable energy and energy efficiency. We do, however, in our letter, devote most of the space to providing specific recommendations on clarifications or changes that we would like to see EPA make in the final rule. And I'll describe a couple of the more significant recommendations we make in the next couple of slides regarding renewable energy and energy efficiency. First, I'll describe the main recommendation we make concerning renewable energy is that EPA allow states to take credit for renewable energy based on the amount of renewable energy they are consuming within the state, not necessarily the amount of generation that occurs within the state's jurisdictional boundaries. And we think there's a few different important advantages to crediting renewable energy based on consumption, chiefly that it as a policy mechanism, it properly incentivizes the investment in renewable energy by crediting those utilities and the ratepayers that are investing in renewable energy. And secondly, it can leverage existing tracking systems that are already in place in the western United States and elsewhere that track renewable energy based on where it's consumed. And finally, we think it also helps to encourage existing forms of renewable energy policy like a renewable portfolio standard. Piece of input that we provided to EPA, and probably the most significant in our letter, concerns how EPA would allow states to credit energy efficiency. In this case, we ask EPA to consider changing changing in the final rule what they proposed in June. In this case, EPA envisioned or proposes that that states would get credit for energy efficiency based on only on the effects of the energy efficiency they invest in that reduce emissions within that state's borders. For a state like Oregon that imports significant amounts of fossil-generated electricity, that would mean we would get pennies on the dollar for our investments in energy efficiency, and we don't think that's an intended consequence for EPA's rule by effectively disincentivizing investments in energy efficiency. So we ask that EPA consider changing how energy efficiency would be credited to states by allowing states to credit the full range of emission reductions that arise from their energy efficiency investments, including emission reductions that occur outside of the state. And again, that mirrors the rationale for our recommendation for renewable energy, in that we think that provides a more suitable policy mechanism to incentivize investments in energy efficiency. So lastly, I'll just conclude here with a few next steps that we anticipate concerning EPA's Clean Power Plan. We expect to continue to work together as agencies to understand what EPA's proposal would mean for our state and our different compliance options, and to work with stakeholders to consider the various compliance options leading up to the final rule that we expect EPA to publish later this summer. Once they do that, that will then begin in earnest developing our state plan and working with stakeholders. And ultimately, the state plan, at the very least, will need to be to go through a rulemaking process through our Environmental Quality Commission, but it very well may require other rulemakings and approvals from other state agencies and possibly new legislation if we need new authority to enforce the various mechanisms that we decide we want to include in our state plan. And with that, I can either take questions now or we can move on to Jason and take whole questions till the end.
Does anybody have questions specific to this part
before
we move on?
What is the reduction required of Washington?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I believe it is 71%. So I think Washington received the highest reduction target of any state. I actually have the numbers.
Yeah,
it's almost 72%.
How about Utah? Do you have that?
I do, 27%.
So a state without generation gets 48% reduction, and a state with coal generation gets 27% reduction. Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
so just, you know, a comment, and thank you for this presentation, Colin. We heard this in this committee back in December, just right after you had submitted the letter, I think, to the EPA. And you know, one of the provisions that we've heard about in the plan does allow for some cooperative strategies among states in meeting their targets. And at that time, it still wasn't clear where EPA was going with that. Do we know any more about that? And before you answer that, you know, I also, you know, with respect to what Senator Olson asked about, you know, this discrepancy in, you know, the percentages, you know, I would say that even though our requirement is higher than Utah, I think a lot of people believe that it's going to be easier for us to meet that target than Utah because of all the sort of heavy political lifting that we've done to get to this point, you know, the decision to close Boardman, the various, you know, the RPS, a number of things are going to help us to bring down those percentages, arguably much easier than Utah will.
Thank you. Senator Thompson, you had an answer, and then we'll go to Senator Thompson.
Sorry. Chair Edwards, Senator Dimbro, thank you. We don't have any new specific information directly from EPA about what they may or may not allow concerning multi-state collaboration. I was up here at the end of last year in front of the interim committee, I don't believe there has been any new information from EPA officially regarding that. There's certainly been a lot more conversation amongst states about how we might work together, and that continues.
Senator Thompson.
How much credit do we get out here in Oregon for and Washington get or whatever for the hydroelectricity we generate from the dams on the Columbia?
Jared.
That's as clean as energy as you can get. So how much credit do we get for that?
Senator Thompson, we don't get credit explicitly for the hydroelectric system. EPA in looking at renewables for that block three of their emission guideline looks at new renewable generation. So we certainly, by virtue of having a great deal of hydroelectric infrastructure in place, were we to make efficiency improvements to those, and that happens occasionally, that incremental amount of additional hydroelectric generation, that efficiency improvement or other change to the generation, that would count. But the existing stuff that is the existing generation that is there today does not count directly toward our goal.
Can you go back to the time where that why doesn't that count? Was there a law passed in the state that said we couldn't count that? Was there federal legislation that says you can't count hydro? Hydro, unless it's new hydro. I mean, it's the cleanest energy in the world. Why can't we count it? Why don't we get credit for it?
I think, Senator Thompson, I think the most direct answer to that is no, there's nothing in our state legislation that prohibits EPA from allowing us to count that. I believe that what you're seeing there is a product of EPA's authority under the Clean Air Act, which in this case gives them authority to seek measures to reduce emissions at coal and natural gas power plants. So to the extent that we have coal and natural gas in Oregon and serving Oregonians today, even though we have all of that hydroelectric generation going on, EPA is now in a position where they have to say, look at a state like Oregon and say, okay, what measures does Oregon have to further reduce the emissions at the coal and natural gas within their borders? So one measure to do that would be to expand further on our hydroelectric system, but they don't, they are not able to, under their authority of the Clean Air Act, to explicitly credit into the system existing hydroelectric the way you're describing.
Other questions? Mm-hmm. Okay. Jason? Thanks, Colin.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee. Wait for this guy. I'm Jason Eisdorfer, Program Director of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. We're going to, in the next nine slides, going to walk through some of the existing policies in the state of Oregon that are either directly or indirectly aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We're going to talk a little bit about the policy and rate making that the commission has in general, and then we're going to go outside the state and look at some of the policies that other states have adopted that Oregon doesn't have in within our borders. And before I start, there are sort of four very quick points. One is that when we talk about through energy policy, we're talking about stationary energy policy, not transportation energy policy. Because there's quite a bit going on, this is a very high review. We're happy to go into detail in questions, but I'm just going to hit them and move on. Some of these policies specifically target greenhouse gas reductions. Others are seem to have multiple benefits, and greenhouse gas reduction is one of those several benefits. And then finally, some of these policies will apply to investor-owned, some will apply to consumer-owned, and then some will apply to both. So the first slide is actually not the state. It's the federal policies. I just want to throw this up here. There are lots and lots of federal policies that are looking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. These are ones largely under the Clean Air Act relating specifically to coal generation.